number 49. Welcome to These Fantastic Worlds, a science fiction and fantasy podcast by Jake Jackson. This week's story is called Discoveries. 2040 saw the first mission of the solar system around Kepler-10, the furthest journey for any team of astronauts in the history, as much as it was understood, of human space exploration. A small crew on the tiny spacecraft, the Adamant, had been sent to test whether the planet Kepler-10b, a candidate with Earth-like characteristics, could indeed support life on its dark side, which faced away from its star. Closing in, Agatha, the team leader, a stiff-jawed Swede, had switched off the gravity within the craft and looked across at the navigator and the pilot. Sabine and Georgia, the Baltic twins as they'd not always been affectionately known at Space HQ back on Earth, were focused on securing the landing site several kilometres below. They had brought the craft safely across the 600 light-years from Earth so far. "Several places we can land." The final member of the crew, Imdad, was the analyst and primary technologist. The team of four had worked well together, each specialising but capable of taking on one another's core tasks as necessary. Imdad was also responsible for ensuring the regular video reports would be sent back to Earth. Knowing the videos would take several months to arrive increased the sense of isolation for the crew, but they were the only ones living in their moment, so any triumphs or disasters would be known so long after the event, life would already have moved on beyond its significance. "We have a small window to make this decision, 2 minutes." Sabine was terse. They all knew the dangers of landing in the wrong place. "I've selected one, but I'm checking the ground underneath." He punched the coordinates. Georgia adjusted the flight plan slightly. "I'm picking up some unexpected readings, though." "What is it?" Agatha's mouth was tight. "Seems to be some movement, very slight, but definite. It's just to the side of the best place to land." "1 minute before we're locked in." Sabine spoke what they could all see on their virtual floating screens. "Agatha, look, what's that in the middle of the screen?" Imdad flicked the new view across to the team leader. "You mean just to the left, the cluster of blue shapes shifting slightly. Is that the light, though, from the star reflecting across?" "Maybe. Looks a little like coral." "Well, perhaps we've found life here already." Sabine and Georgia exchanged a glance. "We land there." Imdad made the decision they needed. "Okay, already locked on. No change from now on in." The four of them settled back in their seats, checking the pressure straps and the mechanical backups. Imdad closed his eyes. Agatha tensed her lips, but the Baltic twins stared fiercely ahead, shepherding the craft to the surface of the planet below. They passed through the upper levels of the atmosphere efficiently as planned, the four of them willing the technology of their age to carry out its calibrated tasks. Across the years of travel to this point, very little had gone wrong, just some wear and tear and basic maintenance. The Borden they had been warned about had been well signposted, but now full concentration was required. As they plummeted through the skies of Kepler-10b, their screens focused on both the narrow view of their destination below and the wider image across to the horizon. The pale light of the local star cast a steady, milky glow across the surface and the thin sketches of clouds. There were no signs of water, but an endless landscape of rock, with occasional mounds and ridges and signs of tectonic activity. "Some of the ground seems a little soft," Sabine grunted. "Yes, I've factored that in. Seems to be several places we could land, but the best one scans solid down to at least a kilometre by those little blue shapes. And the rock just there seems to be made of magma and basalt, I think. That's very Earth-like." He mused on that and continued to analyse the chemical structure of the rocky floor. Their destination rushed towards them, and on screen the crew could see the coral-like structures, their wavy blue hairs crusted and calcified, just 7 of them. "Looks like we'll be within a few hundred metres," Georgia looked over at Sabine. "I don't think we'll hit them. Ready?" Sabine lifted her head. "I wonder what they'll make of this video when they see it 7 months from now." "Yep." Georgia tensed. Her years of training in autopilot failure at the academy led to this one crucial moment. "Counting to retro." Agatha's eyes concentrated on the virtual screen with its rapid countdown to the surface of the planet. 3, 2, 1, now. Georgia activated the retro pulse engines, cushioning the fall of the craft, which slowed into the final kilometres of the descent. The Adamant drifted down through a valley of dark, imposing rock, guided by Imdad's presets, like a speck of earth fluffed into an alien landscape that surely would barely notice its presence. "Landing gear," Agatha shouted. "Here we go," Georgia mouthed, her helmet visor sliding across her face. She gripped her knees hard and held her breath. A jolt was followed by another. They landed. The croc rocked on its feet, slid a little, then settled. "Secure," Agatha belted out the next part of the sequence. Sabine punched the instruction to fire thick landing spikes from the craft's feet into the rock below. "Done. Test," Agatha again. Georgia applied a 0.04% thrust into the pulse engines. "No movement," Imdad shouted. "Turn it off. All okay." Agatha completed the command set. The four of them closed their eyes, relief and joy fighting for their attention. "Hey guys, what's that?" Imdad pushed a screen across to the others. "Those blue corals are definitely moving." He watched the latest video send from the system on its months-long journey. "Well, let's get on and do what we're here for." Agatha pushed herself from her seat. "Atmosphere is 20% O2, so double-check your suits." Agatha and Imdad took the first shift. In spite of the years of careful micro-workouts, their bodies felt awkward as they clambered out of the Adamant and looked warily at the ground. "Look, my spikes have cracked the rock." Agatha pointed to the spider's web of fissures spiralling from each embedded foot of the Adamant. They seemed to reflect the streaks of the clouds above. "Yeah." Imdad kneeled down. "And maybe our stability test too. Look, the ground is burned. Lots more cracks. Some sort of hardened lava flow, but more brittle than I thought it would be. We should take a look at the coral shapes." Agatha's heart pumped, faced with the real possibility of life on the planet. "Perhaps their movement's just a churning of rock from below or wind." "There's no wind," Imdad looked up. He checked his suit was able to record and send the report back to the Adamant for relaying onward, vital evidence of success. "No, just speculating." Agatha walked towards the shapes, which were closer than expected. "Look," Imdad pointed to the ground. "The cracks are getting longer. Not wider, though. Nearly there. Oh, my. They are moving. The size of my head," Imdad laughed, almost giddy. "And they're all blue and fine like hairs, almost agitated now. Oh!" The transmission ended at that point. It took nearly 8 months to reach us, as did all the previous reports. The director of the Space Academy, a high-ranking general on secondment from Eurasian military, spoke to the International Conference of Politicians and Scientists on Earth in front of a huge screen in the command hall. "And that's all we've released to the public," she sighed. "But we received another short one from the Adamant itself." "Madam, a call," an aide rushed in with a comms device in his hands. "What? You must take it." He thrust it forward to the glaring general. "Hi, Madam Director. I'm calling from the Museum of Egyptian Antiquities. I've seen your broadcasts. We just found a hidden chamber in one of the pyramids in the graveyards by Giza. It's dated much older than anything we've seen so far. 12,000 years, perhaps more, with evidence of improbable but far advanced technology." "Really? Why so important now?" The director was impatient, all eyes from the conference floor upon her. "The writing on the wall, Madam Director. It's an advanced form of hieroglyph. It talks of seven powerful entities, sort of god priests who destroyed most of the land before being trapped in a final fight near a volcano which erupted and sealed them in the cooling lava flow. And the last remaining people of Earth returned to their star crafts and took the rocks with the god priests imprisoned within to hold them forever in a place that would not be discovered." The caller paused for a moment, clearing his throat. "They had blue hair. Whatever you do, don't let your astronauts disturb them. Get them out of Kepler." The director dropped the comms device to the floor. Too late. This was 7 months ago. She flicked on the unreleased video to show an unsteady view from the top of the Adamant. Seven streams of light streaking into the skies above Kepler 10b. At the head of each stream was a range of shifting, expanding blue. a slightly longer story than usual. I love to explore the connections between science fiction and mythology, religion, all sorts of things. I love connections in principle. Anyway, thank you for listening, and I look forward to seeing you next week. This is Jake Jackson. Goodbye.